Well, the world is dumpster fire, and nothing here makes sense. And you vacillate between crippling fear and constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good, and you're paralyzed with grief. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard. And today on the show, I have got Kevin Rose. And we have a pretty full conversation about a lot of things. He's got a story that goes a ton of places, and it ends with using tigers to treat PTSD. So you're going to want to listen to the whole thing. But first, you're going to have to bear with me, or you're going to have to fast forward about 7 minutes or so, because I have a lot I want to talk about right up top. And I'm sorry for presuming on our friendship like this by pushing my needs at the moment. So I hope you'll forgive me. But here we are. I'm feeling pretty grateful today. After a long string of feeling very ungrateful and very irritable, and my days blending together, and recognizing the reason for it. Don't get me wrong. I think that you can be grateful and upset at the same time. I think that there's room in your brain to hold these two opposing positions. So that's not really my issue. My issue is this. I think that there's a way that you can tell yourself that you're allowed to be upset that can get you in a spiral of staying upset, of looking for the problem, of trying to feed the misery because it's hungry. You know what I'm talking about? Especially if you've dealt with depression, I know that you know what I'm talking about. There's this great, hungry, hungry hole inside of you, and it's starving for your misery. It's starving for it, and there's so much to feed it right now if you're not careful. And I hope you're being careful. I don't know your situation exactly. In fact, I don't know if I know my situation exactly. But I know that call. I know that whisper. I know that hunger. So try to stay away from checking the news too often. It's bad for you anyway. You get the appropriate amount of information and then stop. Try to take a few minutes just for yourself to think about something good in the day. And that's really, really important right now. Because right now, you're required to focus on the positives. You don't have as many external ways to either avoid or completely distract. So you're in it with you. And so you got to step up. We all got to step up. And you know what? I think you're doing a great job. I think that you venting about things not going well, or being frightened of the situation, or being frustrated with the response from the people in charge, or being frustrated by the people around you. I think all of those frustrations are fine. All of that's great, and I hear you. But I also think that it's not a bad idea to remember that there's a part of this story, when it ends, where you get to feel good about how you managed it. I believe in you. Yeah, you. I believe in you. And I'm trying to believe in me. Will you help me with that? I'm trying to be grateful. I'm trying to recognize the sunshine. I'm trying to recognize, you know, how it feels to get out of a shower is great. Baking a loaf of bread, if you can find the flour, something as simple as that. There's joy in it. Find the joy. Because you know what? There's a part of you that's really, really hungry for that too. And it behaves better when you feed it. So let's try to do exactly that. Let's hold the opposing ideas that we're very lucky to be alive, to be healthy, to have a place to be, if you are indeed one of the lucky ones, if that's the new lucky. And let's also be upset that that is the new lucky. It's okay. It's completely okay. Because at the end of the day, we're all just human beings. And human beings are wired to take emotional beatings. We're capable. We'll get through this the same way we got through anything else, even if we've never seen anything like this. I know it sounds like I'm talking to you, but maybe I'm talking to me. Thanks for listening. I really appreciate it. You know, I really needed to get that off my chest and find a way to contextualize it so I could move forward. And now we can move forward with Kevin Rose. Well then, hi. This is it. We're doing it.
Here we go.
Here we go.
We're on.
So, right out of the gate, how are things in your world? How's it going, Kevin?
Everything is, you know, upended.
Yeah.
It's good, though. Yeah, I mean, to be quite honest with you, it's a forced Sabbath.
Yeah.
I'm having to, you know, you're really having to take it easy because you got no other choice. So, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, you can shake your fist at the clouds if that's your thing, but... Yeah, yeah, you're right. Other than that, there's not a whole lot you can do about it. And I think that that can teach you something about yourself as far as what kind of a person you are. If you're a person that's pretty good at rolling with the punches, or if you're a person that's pretty stuck in a rigid format of how things ought to be, and once that's upended, it's just chaos.
Yeah. And, you know, I can honestly say that, you know, I would have fit in the previous category for most of my life. And even so during this, you know, I'm admittedly a workaholic. So I've gone from workaholic to zero in 5 days.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It's a great thing, spending more time with my kid and learning more about Harry Potter than I ever wanted to know.
yeah.
Right. So,
well, tell me a little bit about the old life. Where do you come from?
Originally, I grew up in a little town called Maryville, Tennessee.
Really?
It's right on the foothills of the Smokies.
Oh, nice.
So I grew up camping, hiking, being in the wild, which I always loved.
Oh, yeah.
And then moved to Florida in my 20s, and I've been here ever since. In one place or another.
Florida's pretty wild, though, right? Like, there's a lot of animals and a lot of craziness.
Yeah, I mean, you know, where I am in Central Florida now, there's tons of mosquitoes. It's swampland. You know,
yeah.
Disney came in, drained it, put a big theme park there.
Yeah.
But it's still pretty wild. Like, we're backed up to a conservation area. And we have a bear that lives in the conservation area that emerges every so often. So, you know, it certainly has its moments.
Were you always fascinated by animals?
Yeah, I've always, you know, been drawn towards the animal world. You know, I found that I could trust animals with much more ease than I could humans at a younger age. So I think that allowed me the space to really begin to listen to them, for lack of better words.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a thing that I discovered pretty recently that they say that there's, especially if you've got any kind of, I don't know, like a social anxiety, you may find yourself drawn to animals more so than other people. How were you with other people?
I was always good with other people. You know, I found solace in nature, because there was never any false face, right?
Yeah.
It was always what it presented in the present moment. There was, you know, never anything to guess about. Of course there's activity that animals do that you may want to be wary of, but you know, you always had pretty much what you see is what you get, and that I really appreciate.
What was the early beginnings of, let's say, what it is you're doing now?
I grew up with, I spent a lot of time with my grandmother, and they had a farm. It was about 50 acres. And we used to take lots of walks in the woods and in the fields. And she taught me this really simple technique, grounding technique, being in the present, that I carry with me my whole life. And it helped me to connect with animals with much more ease. And then later in life, I learned that it helps to connect with people as well. So that was really the beginnings of it.
So, without burying the lead too much, tell me a little bit about what it is you're doing now, because it's pretty fascinating stuff.
Absolutely. I have a program called The Catalyst, and it is a human-animal interaction experience where I teach people to go from chaotic to calm in just seconds. And I do this by bringing them face to face with tigers.
Live tigers.
Live tigers. I work with a rescue animal sanctuary here in Central Florida. And I found that working with animals, as we said before, it's always face front. There's never any question about what's happening. Now, we work through the fencing, of course, on the enclosures.
Yeah.
But we're right up next to the tiger. And how it works, I'll have, when someone shows up, I'll have them think of something stressful, bring it into their mind, and then I have them feel how that translates into their body. Then I'll have them quantify it, 0 out of 10, and pick a number, 0 being no stress, 10 is excruciating stress. And then as we approach the enclosure, when the person is in that stress state, even in their mind, the animal will literally begin to mirror what they're feeling. So if they're angry, perhaps angry, the animal will begin to pace, growl, move away. And then I teach this really simple technique that allows the person to totally be present in the moment. And as they begin to calm, which happens really quickly, the animal will mirror that behavior as well. So it's really a live biofeedback kind of experience.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. It really is, because not only do the animals that are in the enclosures react, but you begin to feel how nature reacts as well. Like if somebody is stressed and that stress level begins to rise, maybe the dogs will start barking at the neighbor's house, or the wind will start picking up. It's amazing when you pay attention to your surroundings and the environment, how much it is shown, how much we really affect our environment and what's around us. So the closer you watch, the more you begin to learn.
There's a lot of control that you have that you might not even be aware of.
There's a lot of effect for sure that you have. You know, you can go into a room with a group of people and you can begin to feel if it's comfortable or it's not, right? You don't even have to see the reaction of the people's faces. You know if you feel comfortable or not. And that's because we, as humans and as any living being, we create a frequency. So we're electric, right? We're electric beings, and we put out a frequency. And what happens is we begin to resonate with different frequencies. Now, this is physics. This isn't woo-woo.
Right.
Are you familiar with the term resonance and what it means?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Right? I'm a musician.
Right? Oh, right on. Then you absolutely know. So when you begin to feel that resonance from someone else, whether it's good vibes or yucky vibes, you literally begin to choose inside how you're going to react and respond to that. And so that creates, just having that knowledge, just having that awareness, creates a really cool potential for your growth and your well-being as a person.
Well, and also I think that there's a fair amount of conditioning that would have to be put into place if you're a person that doesn't have your empathy on lock.
Perhaps, but what happens is what I've come to learn. I've been a body worker, a massage therapist for 25 years, and that's a lot of why this started, because I would be able to feel where someone was in their process. You can feel if they're getting tense, or you can feel if they're relaxed. And so what I would do, if someone's on the table and they're tense, I'll just have them bring their awareness to their body, bring their awareness to that tension, not try to stop it, but just bring their awareness to it. And what happens is immediately they relax. So even with heavy conditioning, simple awareness of where you are in space and time can change any conditioning really quickly. And here's the cool thing. The body thrives on homeostasis, balance, right? So it's always looking for the thing that creates the most balance. And when it finds something that brings it into balance really quickly, it adopts that. And then as a human, we form these neural pathways about how we react and respond to things. And so when it takes on this really homeostatic sound mechanism, a new neural pathway in our brain is created really, really quickly, and it grooves really, really quickly. So it takes over conditioning. It overrides the conditioning because our bodies are trying to keep us on the planet.
That's incredible.
It is. It really is. I mean, when you think about the miracle that we are walking around, and you know, people say it all the time,
yeah,
but just the millions and millions of activities that are going on inside this little container are fantastic.
Yeah there's so many different things about the human mind that we don't know, and yet based on the things that we do know, one of the things that I find the most fascinating, you're talking about creating neural pathways on the fly. The very fact that you can alter your mind through conditioning, you can actually physically change your brain through conditioning and thought patterns and behavior. I mean, that's not nothing.
No, it's manifestation, man. I mean, look, if you want to go the woo-woo side, it's the law of attraction. You know, people hear about that all the time. We're doing law of attraction constantly. There's this fantastic mechanism inside the brainstem called the reticular activating system. Are you familiar with this?
No, I'm not. Tell me about it.
Yes. So the reticular activating system basically is a filter for all the sensory input that comes into our body. Everything we see, smell, taste, touch, all this information goes through this reticular activating system in our brainstem. And basically our brainstem, and I'm oversimplifying this, okay? But basically that mechanism takes in this information and it puts it into one of two categories. Either the information that's coming in is safe and sound, or it's new and alien. And what happens is when information comes in that seems new or alien, it sets off our fight, flight, freeze response. So the reticular activating system is the precursor to the fight, flight, freeze response. So, for example, if you're sitting in a room and you hear a phone ring and it's a quiet room, and then it rings and it rings, part of you begins to elevate, right? You get annoyed because you hear that sound coming in. That's your reticular alarm system taking in that information, and it's putting it in that alien category. Now, that's a really, really basic example. But the same thing happens when you're dealing with trauma, right?
Yeah.
Because that reticular activating system has taken that information in, traumatic information. Now, here is the really interesting part, in my opinion. Now that the reticular activating system has taken that in and has created the fight, flight, freeze response, your reticular activating system will begin looking in the environment to find things that match that incident. So it will try to find things that are stressful. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's trying to make sense out of something that doesn't make sense.
Right. But it can also do the other side. It can also find the calm.
So, what makes it decide that?
Well, here's where your awareness and your consciousness comes into play. Okay, that phone ringing, yeah, I hear it. Okay, I'm all right. So you go right into the calm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so now, if you were to take your awareness and consciousness to that calm side and go, oh, okay, everything's cool. Let me find some more calming things. If you literally just made that one little change, that one little awareness, you can begin finding calming things in your environment.
Or you can decide that you're going to become agitated.
That's right.
And look for more agitating things.
Right, right. And it becomes habitual to look for the more agitating things because we want to figure it all out, put it in a box.
Yeah.
And be done with it, right?
Yeah. But if you are wiring yourself this way, and that is indeed what you're doing when you start making decisions about reactions, you're creating a wiring that says, when this happens, I do this. And then it changes the language that you use about things, and that changes the way you think about things and the way you feel about things, and you start creating the self that you've created. And when you go through all of that with a person who's kind of put themselves in that situation, for better or for worse, sometimes through no fault of their own, just, you know, poor guidance or no guidance or you know, what have you. How do you start to take that and turn it in another direction so quickly?
I can give you an example of that.
Please.
So when you're in that space of fight, flight, freeze, it can be difficult to get out of it, right?
Yeah.
Because you've created that neural pathway that says, no, find the danger. But if you begin thinking of stress and pain as a biological cue, right? And here's where the conditioning comes in. So you think of stress and pain as a biological cue. Now, if I ask you what to do, what do you do when you're hungry? What do you say?
Yeah, you eat.
Yeah. What do you do when you're thirsty?
You drink.
What do you do when you're sleepy?
Well, hopefully you go to sleep.
Right. Those are all biological cues.
Yeah.
Hunger, thirst, fatigue, biological cues. But we don't freak out when we're hungry, thirsty, and sleepy. We go eat, drink, and sleep. Now, I could ask a million people, what do they do when they're hungry, thirsty, and sleepy? And I would get the same
pretty much three answers, right?
Yeah,
but if I asked the same million people, what do you do when you're stressed or in pain? I'd probably get a million different answers.
Right? Yeah.
But stress and pain are biological cues. If I can begin to use that biological cue of stress and pain to me to come into my body to be fully present in the moment by utilizing my senses, then I begin to respond to stress and pain in a totally different way. Because when I become present, it takes me out of my mind, right? When I become present in my body. Now, with hunger, thirst, and fatigue, you don't just do them once in life and then they're done. You do them constantly, all day long.
Right. It's and that so, conditioning, that training.
Yeah. Yeah. So if we begin to then look at stress and pain as a biological cue and we train our bodies to do something differently when that cue comes in, it can be just as regular as eating, drinking, and sleeping. Now, I want to show you this technique. I want, if I can walk you through it, would you be willing to do that?
Yeah, let's do it.
Great. Do you have coffee right now?
You better believe it.
All right, right on. Anything to drink, is always the best because it covers all the senses.
Yeah.
So what you have to drink, what kind of container is it in?
It's a mug.
Okay. So what I'm going to have you do is feel yourself sitting in the chair. First of all, feel your butt in the chair.
Okay.
If you're sitting or if you're standing, feel your feet on the ground. And I want you to bring to mind something that creates stress.
Oh, that's not hard.
Okay. So you have it?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. So as you're rolling that stressful thought around in your mind, begin to pay attention where it's translating into your body. So where do you feel that stress from your mind in your body right now? Like, where do you feel it start to grow?
I feel it in my chest.
Okay. So I want you to quantify that 0 out of 10, 0 being not stressful, 10 is excruciatingly stressful. Where would you find it right now in this moment? What's the number?
I think I can get myself up to a decent 4.
Okay, great. Now pick up your mug, and as you're holding the mug, really bring your awareness down to your fingertips. Really notice the texture of the mug, and then lift the mug up, take a drink, and as you're drinking, smell the liquid, taste it as it's going down your mouth, feel the texture of it. Listen to the sound it makes as you're drinking. And then bring your awareness back to your fingers, back to the mug, all the way down, and feel yourself sitting in the chair. And 0 out of 10, measure the level now.
It's gone.
So here's the thing. I didn't distract you from the stress. The stress distracts you from being present in your body. The stress takes you up into the mind, and it starts its round and round thinking. But when you utilize all your senses at once to bring you fully present in the moment, what it does is it disengages the mind. And so now you're fully present. So if you begin to use stress and pain as a cue to engage your senses just like this, then you can literally begin to reprogram your whole world just with that simple technique.
But you couldn't have always known this. When did you first start making yourself aware? So your grandmother taught you this.
Yeah, when I was 12 years old, man. I used to go to her house. I grew up in a kind of a volatile situation. So I would go to her house, spend the weekend with her, and we would go for these walks. And she would say to me, hey, tell me about what happened last week. And she wouldn't be nosing around, but she wanted to get me in that state of stress. And so as I would begin to get stressed, she would interrupt me and say, hey, look at that tree over there. What face do you see that in that tree? Or feel this leaf. What, smell it. Listen to the crunch that it makes. So she would utilize my senses to break that chain of thought process to bring me present in the moment. And so now, that was when I was 12 years old.
So what are you learning at 12? I mean, it, because there's language, right? There's there's awareness, there's language, and as you become older and you're more sophisticated and you're more in your own skin, you might start using different language or even have a deeper understanding of who you are in yourself and what these different concepts mean. But at 12, what are you taking away from something like this?
The elementary part of just being present. That's the whole thing. Like when I tell you right now, as you're thinking and as you're talking, notice, do you recognize that you have the rest of your body underneath your head? And did you recognize it before I asked you if you recognized it?
No.
Right. So if you wiggle your toes, what that does is it brings your awareness all the way down to your body. Now I want you to wiggle your toes and I want you to just notice what your body feels like right now. Are you stressed? Or are you calm?
I mean, I'm at the level of agitation that I typically vibrate at.
Right. So where would you say that is?
But a good one. I'd say it's a different thing. I mean, it's right. I think vibration is probably the right word. I have a lot of energy, but I've conditioned myself to look at the energy as a positive. And I've also conditioned myself to make myself a little more present every now and again, but it is something I forget to do. And I don't always know that I'm doing it. So the idea of almost being able to snap your fingers into presence is kind of interesting to me.
If you begin looking at stress and pain as a biological cue, it's your body trying to get your attention. Because listen, if you don't eat, drink, and sleep, what does your body do?
Yeah, it falls apart.
Yeah, it begins talking louder. It begins saying, hey, you're going to have to do something here. The same thing with stress and pain. But what happens is we get in these stressful states or in this pain, and we begin trying to figure it out. How do I get out of this? And all your body is trying to do is bring you back in. So what my grandmother taught me was presence. Now, you know, I went for years and years wiggling my toes and paying attention in nature and my senses without even knowing what I was doing.
Right.
But I knew that it calmed me in the moments when I needed to be calmed.
But then how do you start bringing fucking tigers into this?
Well, now that's a whole different discussion, my man. And here's how. Here's why.
So yeah, take me there. Take me down the road.
Absolutely. So I was a body worker. In 1996, I started as a massage therapist, and I worked on lots of people. And at that time, you know, there was really nothing heavy duty going on in the world, right? We were just kind of cruising.
Sure.
Well, 1999, I think it was April 20th, when Columbine hit, right? When the Columbine shooting happened.
Yeah.
And what I noticed in bodies was there was a little bit of a rift, like almost a tightening going on. And I wasn't really aware of it then as I am now looking back. But there was a little bit. Well, then when 9/11 hit, everybody was locked down. There was tension everywhere, right? And so I felt that. Yes, I felt that translate in bodies, right? I felt that progression going on. So I'm sitting on the beach on 9/11, and like everybody else at that time that, you know, was old enough to, you know, respond to it, I was saying, what am I supposed to do here? And Chris, I'll tell you, for probably the first time in my life, I heard really clearly the only thing that I can call God. And what I heard was, it was in my voice, but just this deep resonance inside of me that said, we're going to war, and you're to create a program that helps those coming home feel grounded and peaceful. Now, I had no idea what that meant. So for the next 10 years, I followed the universal breadcrumbs and followed them along. I began working with a doctor who provided free programs for combat veterans coming home, free reintegration programs, helping them learn how to deal with stress. So I began working with combat veterans, tons and tons of combat veterans, and learning about the things that made them react and respond all the time. And what I noticed was, even in doing the table work, we could get them to relax to a certain point, but almost inevitably when they would get up, they would pop right back up. Well, I figured that that's the fight, flight, or freeze response that somehow stuck. And so what can I do to help to alleviate that? I had the opportunity to, and I'm paraphrasing this, trying to move through the story so, you know, people don't film over as I'm talking. But I worked with a lot of therapists that this doctor trained. And this one woman, she worked hands-on with wolves at a place called Wolf Park in Indiana. And I had the opportunity to go work hands-on with wolves. I was going there to learn how to be around captive wild animals and work on their injuries. So this wolf park, it's an ethology park. And so they study wolves in their quote-unquote natural habitat. So they have like a 30-acre enclosure where they keep this main pack. Now, we walk into this enclosure, and I'm the new guy, right? I'm with a couple of the people that work there. And as we're walking in, I look down this hill, and I see this pack of seven wolves come flying up the hill. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen a wolf up close and personal, but they're about 150 pounds, and massive animals, and they're all coming at me.
Yeah.
Well, I love animals. But let me tell you something. That was a whole new situation.
Yeah.
Well, they come flying up towards me, and they circle me and start bumping and growling in this really tight circle. And the more stressed I got, the more loud and rambunctious they got around me. And my heart was in my throat. I didn't know what to do. And I hear my grandmother's voice, "Hey, wiggle your toes, engage your senses." And as soon as I did, the wolves basically just walked away. And I thought, holy shit, did that just happen?
Yeah.
And can I make it happen again?
Can I do it again?
Yeah. So poke it with a stick, right? So
yeah.
I raise the stress again. And sure enough, they come right back in around me and start circling, grounding it. And I ground myself again using that sensory technique. And they walked away again, and then they started, as long as I stayed in that state, they would come up one at a time and let me work hands-on with them. And even that day, the alpha submitted himself to me, which was a huge deal.
Yeah.
So that got my attention, and I knew that's what I needed to do. So long story short, my wife and I had just moved to we're in the Orlando area, and I started looking for a place to work with predator animals, because I knew if I could get people close enough that I could initiate that fight, flight, freeze response relatively safely by not creating more trauma for them, I could show them how to turn it down by using that sensory technique. I found a woman, actually, after 2 years of looking, a friend said, "Hey, have you been to the CARE Foundation?" I said, "No." I went over, started volunteering, and about a month later, I brought it up to the owner. I said, "Listen, I know you may freak out about what I'm about to say, but I have this idea. I want to create this program for combat veterans, free of charge to them, so we can help them reintegrate." Well, it turns out her father was a Vietnam vet that committed suicide as a result of PTSD.
Yeah.
So opened the door right away. I started testing the program for about 5 years. I tested it, brought friends, family, coworkers, whoever I could get to walk through it. And as soon as I knew it was ready, I offered it out to combat veterans. And to this day, I still offer it free to combat veterans. So I've been doing it for about 10 years. And there's about 200 animals at the sanctuary. And so we work with all the animals because they all have reactions. The tigers are the big aha moment, because when you can be next to a tiger and you can be present without feeling that fear, that agitating fear, it's a pretty remarkable witnessing.
Yeah, my wife used to work with big cats at a big cat rescue.
Yeah, right on.
And she said that, you know, once she got to know them, they were just giant cats. But every once in a while, they'd put their teeth on you like a regular old cat does, or they'd, you know, pop their claws out and you remember. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Little bigger scale.
Little bigger.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of the long and short of it. So I've been doing it 10 years, always free to combat vets. And what happens is I needed something to match their dynamic. Like I had worked with horses and dogs, but it just didn't. So I needed something to match that dynamic of that fight, flight, freeze response.
Yeah.
To bring it full face. And what happens is when you go up close to the tigers, it creates this excitement. And that's a really key thing too, is excitement has the same resonance as fear in your body.
Yeah.
And so when you create that, you can then begin to recognize, oh, that's what it feels like in that fight, flight, freeze response. I teach them that really simple sensory technique. And as soon as they can do that, they begin to calm. They watch the animal calm. And all it takes, literally, it's like 90 minutes a session. And it changes lives, man. It's remarkable to see the outcomes. I've become friends with a lot of the combat vets on Facebook. And I've had the opportunity then to be able to see their posts before and their posts after. And it's really remarkable to see the change, to see the presence, to see the softening. I hesitate to use that word, but that's really what it is.
Yeah. There's nothing negative in that word. It has connotations you bring to it, I guess, but.
Right. Right.
But as far as all of this is concerned, I mean, you mentioned volunteer work before and you mentioned this, and it seems, and even with your chosen career path, there was a level of service involved. So were you always the kind of person that would grab whatever, you know, emotional toolkit that you had and try to bring it to the moment? Were you always that person?
I've had my moments, you know what I mean? But it's a constant awareness that you have to keep yourself in. Look, I throw temper tantrums like everybody else, right?
Sure.
I have my moments of that as well. But in the back of my mind, there's always this voice saying, you know, you have a different option here. And the grace is that sometimes, not all the time, but pretty consistently as I get older, I will throw that in there, I choose to wiggle my toes, engage my senses, and change the dynamic of that moment. And I'll repeat that again. As I get older, it gets easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's one thing that I can definitely say to people, you know, especially when I'm having a conversation with other people who have had suicidal ideation or chronic depression or things like that, that I can relate to. One of the ways that I got myself through it was by actually owning it and taking stock of it and saying, well, this is part of the situation, but now who am I going to be?
Right.
How am I going to react to these feelings and these thoughts when they come in? And there is a level of being present involved in that. And if you can get these people to come face to face with something that represents power, danger, unpredictability, and recognize that level of that within themselves, because we're all capable of that, and just take it down to the moment they need to bring themselves to the realization that they're just as much a part of this as everything, and they're in control of taking ownership of themselves in the space that they occupy. It's not nothing. That's pretty amazing stuff.
Yeah, it's massive. It really is. It's an interesting process to watch in myself and to watch in others, because it's a light that comes on that I think we're all kind of looking for.
Yeah.
Because we're looking for that quick fix, that pill, that whatever will take care of it right now, it seems like we're always looking for that. And I think that a lot of that comes from technology and
sure.
you know, the introduction of all that, right? The instant gratification.
Yeah, we're making ourselves real anxious.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But the beauty about it is this is a quick fix.
You know, that's what I find so fascinating about it is that it is that instant gratification, but it's coming from within rather than from without.
Yeah, it's empowered.
Yeah.
It's utilizing the whole dynamic that is you, the person. And it's beginning to explore that. And then what happens is you recognize, you know, I used to hear people say all the time, oh, yeah, we're all one. I was like, what? What does that mean? I don't even know.
Yeah.
But what happens is as you begin to play with this, then you begin to realize, oh, yeah, we are. Because as I ground myself, everything is present around me. And I can sit and watch things on the outside go up and down. And here's something that I've discovered. So I can literally ground myself. And if there's someone in front of me, say in a grocery store line or in traffic that's going insane, ground myself, and what happens is if I'm offering that out, it will affect that other person. Now, I play with this all the time. I'm not manipulating anyone's energy field. All I'm doing is grounding myself and offering it out. And because of the fantastic phenomenon of resonance,
yeah,
I can see it happen. I can see it take effect, and I can see it make a difference. Now, it may just be a momentary where that person kind of looks and then goes back to wherever their rage was. But oftentimes it slows the whole process down.
Yeah.
And it's remarkable to see.
Well, everybody's had that moment, you know, where they say, I think something just walked over my grave, you know, that strange moment where you feel something completely foreign out of nowhere. And it makes you feel a certain way in your own skin. And we've all felt that. We've all felt that in a room full of people that, you know, there's something off in here and I don't know what it is. Or there's something really great in here. That's why people like to gather together in large congregations, because it feels good when you're at a rock concert or a church or, you know, whatever your bag is. But people getting together, that's why people say that going to... I have friends that are like, going to a baseball game is really fun, but I don't watch it on TV. Right. It's that same kind of thing, because you feed Absolutely. Off of that. You feed off of that resonance of other human beings when it's
that
good.
Joy. Yeah, that joy. But you also feed off of it when it's not good.
Yeah.
But the beauty of it is, as you begin to play with this little technique and you ground yourself, what happens is you can be the one that begins emanating that joy.
Huh.
And watch it change that around you. Now, I've got a 10-year-old daughter, and she has been my little science experiment. God bless her.
Aren't they
and
all?
Her mom and I have created a therapy account just in case we screw her up, then she'll have money
down the road. Look, it's not if you screw her up, it's how.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But I have taught her how to do this technique since she and I were able to communicate. And I can tell you, especially when she was smaller and she would fall and hurt herself, she'd have blood running down her knee and she'd be wiggling her toes. And yeah, she might cry a little bit for a few seconds, but then it just ceases.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to watch her grow, because she's growing in that teaching. And it's become part of her persona. It's become part of her psyche. It's built in. So hopefully that creates more of a bulletproof kind of cell for her consciousness for her. But I've watched how easily and naturally it grows in a child. And I see how it's grown in myself really easily and naturally, and how it's affected others around me. So it truly is a profound and powerful technique that is so easy and so natural. I don't hesitate to say it can change the world.
Yeah.
It really can. Yeah.
Giving the gift of self.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well,
absolutely.
So what's next on the horizon?
It's a great question, man. I've been doing this 10 years and I'm coming to a place where I think it's kind of slowing down and I'm moving to the next chapter. I've been in contemplation. I've been listening because something is coming and it's so interesting. Yeah, it's so interesting because right before all this happened with this virus, I knew that something was coming, that I was supposed to do something different, maybe continue on with the catalyst, but there's an evolution that's coming in the work. I don't know what that is yet, but I can't wait to see it because if it's anything like this, this has been a hell of a ride. And so if it's anything like this, what's coming next is even more spectacular. And that means for mankind, for humankind, there's good things coming, man. You got to go through the chaos and you got to go through the crap, but out of chaos comes order.
Growth hurts. Right?
That's right. Yep. It does. And I'm hoping that, that people are beginning to understand that a little more. It seems that way.
Well, fingers crossed and toes wiggled.
That's all. Absolutely. Toes wiggled for sure.
Thanks for talking to me today.
Hey, thanks so much, man. And I want to throw in there too, if I've got on my website, there's a drop down with the free PDF of this technique. As a matter of fact, I had a Disney artist illustrate it. And it's really simple. So it's just, I just like to give that to make sure that people have that. Is it okay if I give my website?
Yeah, let's get it out there.
Yeah, man. It's www.catalystrefuge.com. Catalystrefuge.com. And the drop down is on the landing page. It's free PDF. Yeah, you'll get a few emails coming from it. I think I sent like 4 in this autoresponder, but you can take your name off of the list anytime you want. But I would love to people to at least have that grounding technique so you can begin to play with it.
All right. Well, thank you for that.
Chris, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate the space and the space that you and other podcasters create is really, really important. So I'm very, very thankful and grateful for the time.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And there you have it, a story of using all of the tools at your disposal for some good in the world. If that doesn't make you feel better about how things are going, I don't know what will. This is a Tiger story that you can actually feel good about paying attention to. If you want to get some more of this in your life, and I know that you do, you can find all kinds of great pictures on Instagram at Catalyst Refuge. You can go to catalystrefuge.com. There's a TED Talk in the link below. And if you've never gone to all of the stuff that I put in the podcast link below, in your podcast player, just scroll down. I bet you'll see a bunch of stuff there that you never saw before. Text and links to places where my guests can be found and all sorts of other fun resources to get you through these long days. So until next time, don't kill yourselves out there.